Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast. I'm Jessica Trotter, and I'm joined around the mic by Cheryl Lindemann and Maricela Garza. It's Native American Heritage Month, and we really wanted to highlight a selection of titles featuring Indigenous authors. There is so much more to be found lately, which is so fabulous, and so many great works.
Yeah, for sure.
That even kind of cutting this down to fit this, it's a little hard.
To see that change from when I started becoming a librarian and publishing, I mean, the stories were there, they just weren't being published.
Exactly.
I remember Louise Erdrich's stories and, you know, a few other authors, but now in so many other areas too, children's, adult, nonfiction.
I do think it's really amazing. I'm going to go ahead and get us started with the first title that I'm recommending. It's actually The Reluctant Storyteller by Art Colson, and it's illustrated by Carlin Bear Won't Walk. Carlin Bear Don't Walk. And I actually, before I begin talking about this book, I do remember, like, lately I am thinking of picture books that are nonfiction, like We Are Still Here by Tracy Sorrell, and also We Are Grateful. I mean, these are just lovely, gorgeous, gorgeous books. And that's kind of been a lot of what I've been focusing on in the last few years. But I've been reading fiction titles, too. And this one appealed to me. It's called The Reluctant Storyteller, and it's actually a very compact little book. It's by Raycraft Books, and there's kind of like maybe two or three stories and then a nice little nonfiction section in the back. So I recommend not just the story that I'm going to talk about, but the other ones that are listed here. So it's, like I said, a slim book, and it starts off with this family that's living in Minnesota. And they all live together, and this is the 10-killer family. They live with the boy, lives with his mom, his name's Maurice, his mom, his uncles, and a number of other people, all related to the extended family in Minnesota. And it's kind of a J fiction book that has illustrations in it, so I think it will definitely appeal to early readers, early J fiction readers. And so Maurice talks, you can tell that he has a little bit of resentment in that his family, they're storytellers. They like to tell tall tales, things that make people laugh, things from family history. And he's kind of like not given so much to telling stories, and he feels like he's being expected to tell, to also be a storyteller. He is on his way to a spring break that he doesn't really want to be on with his two uncles, heading out to Oklahoma because he is Cherokee, and he is heading to the area in Oklahoma where the rest of his extended family lives. He ends up going to a powwow, and you get to hear a little bit about what his dreams are for his life. So this is modern day, and that's what I think was most appealed to me, is like I'm getting to read about, you know, the potential for a boy in modern day America living in Native nations. He's interested in cooking. He's interested in bringing food alive, in making Native American foods tasty for everyone and bringing them to the greater cultures out there. But it's illustrated. I want to point you to pages 26 and 27, because this is one of the stories that's featured here, is this story. One of the uncles tells the story of this fox who is out in the woods, and he's hanging out with the birds, and he really wants to be like the birds, but, you know, foxes don't generally fly. And it is this tale, this story, that, you know, where he finds a way to follow the birds up and up and up and up. And it's kind of the setup for how he gets to live out his dream. This would be Maurice, or Chooch, as his nickname is. I liked the very end. Well, I'm not sure if I mentioned this yet. Page 26 and 27, you have to look at it. Beautiful, beautiful illustrations. you see the woods, you see the fox out there with the birds. Really, really nice. But I want to mention the very end where Tracy Sorrell gives a really nice introduction to what modern day life is like on the Cherokee Reservation lands in Oklahoma. Very developed First Nation out there. Someplace I'd really like to visit. And an invitation exists for children with school groups or even on your own with your family to go visit. So, yeah.
Wow. Okay. That sounds really good. Well, I'm going to follow that up with I never read middle grade novels. Never. But I read I've actually read two this year, but this is one of them. Mm-hmm. The Star That Always Stays by Anna Rose Johnson is a middle grade novel set around about 1914, and it features a bright and feisty young woman named Norvia Nelson. She is part Ojibwe, and her father's actually, I think he's from Norway. And she, her early life is on Beaver Island. She spends time with her grandpère, who instilled a pride in her Ojibwe heritage, but her parents get a divorce, and this is 1914. This is very stigmatizing for the family. And her mother actually sort of frighteningly gets married very quickly afterwards and moves the family to Boyne City, where she's a new house, new school, stepfather, stepbrother, who she's really not sure about, older stepsister. So she's just got all these firsts and, you know, pulled out of everything she knows. And on top of that, her mother would like her not to mention that she is native and not mention their heritage, because she's already got the stigma of the divorce hanging over her head. And it's just, she wants them to fit in. And Nervia just is not thrilled with all of this. Anna Rose Johnson does a really great kind of peek into this woman, you know, young woman's life as she's just trying to make it make sense. Nervia's sort of leans on her inspiration from her favorite books, like Little Women and Anne of Green Gables. And in some ways, the book itself becomes sort of a lovely kind of love letter to those feisty girl characters in children's literature. But it also pulls from Johnson's own family history, too. And there's a bit of a afterword that talks about those tie-ins as well. So again, it's a Michigan story. It's a Ojibwe family. And it's kind of trying to make, trying to understand that second found family, and it works out. And I will say, I particularly like this because very rarely is the step parent a really sweet, cool person in the story.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
And he is in this book. So this is The Star That Always Stays by Anna Rose Johnson.
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah, that sounds so good. That's been recommended a lot. I feel like people are really enjoying that. I have a book called The Seed Keeper, a novel by Diane Wilson. And this is by Milkweed Editions. And we've talked about them on the podcast before.
Because it's an automatic buy now.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Absolutely. They make the most beautiful books. They're so careful. They're beautifully made. They're like works of art, each of them. So are almost all the books we talk about. But there's just a special carefulness put into these books. Mm-hmm. And this is a beautiful and moving, also painful work of fiction. And it's about Rosalie Ironwing, who is a Dakota woman. It's not just her story. It starts with her, but it goes back multi-generations to the U.S. Dakota War of 1862. And the resettlement at that time of land and resettling of indigenous people off their land goes into the boarding schools, and also talks about seeds and saving seeds, heirloom seeds that were saved by women during the U.S. Dakota War by they sewed them into their clothing and they buried them into these very tight, sealed, airtight places so that they could be found by generations going forward, because seeds represented literally and figuratively survival.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you move forward into settled land, settled by European settlers, settled by Germans. This is set in Minnesota, the Minnesota River, set in the Mankato part of the story, part alongside the river. But now you have land that's been settled by largely German immigrants in the area, and Rosalie Ironwing, through a turn of events, ends up marrying one of the white farmers in the area. And she does end up loving her life, and she uses the seeds from the German women in the family, the heirloom seeds. She just loves gardening, loves seeds. Well, a chemical company comes in town, and it says, hey, this is going to change everything. You use our seeds. And it sounds very chillingly similar to some true stories in America of something happening like that. You use our seeds, you're going to have better yields, but you have to sign a contract. You have to use our seeds. And you have to use these chemically treated seeds, and you have to use these chemicals. Well, her husband ends up dying of cancer related to the chemicals. So there's another complication there. But this goes through multiple generations of people in her family telling the story and ultimately talking about the resilience of the seeds and the resilience of the women and of the family. The author, Diane Wilson, is a Dakota, a member of Dakota Nation, and she's also the head of the Native American Food Sovereignty Alliance, and she talks about that in the back of the book and the importance of saving seeds and of resisting efforts to use patented and chemically treated seeds. So there's a lot going on here, but just a beautiful book, The Seed Keeper.
Very cool. Yeah.
Wow. Very nice. Well, I do have another picture book. This is Berry Song by Michaela Goad, and you probably recognize her name because she is the Caldecott medalist and number one New York Times best-selling artist of We Are Water Protectors. That book was written by Carol Lindstrom, but she's just really beginning to put out a lot more titles, but that was how I learned about that author or that illustrator, Michaela Goad. This is a beautiful, beautiful book that kind of is an ode to the fruits of the land, and specifically berries in this case. She talks about there's a grandma and a daughter and a granddaughter going into the woods, and they're pointing out all these different berries, some that I had never heard of. I have heard of lingon berries, thimble berries. I was a tiny bit familiar with those. Bunch berries, bog blueberries. It's just a lovely, lovely book. And I was listening to some music this morning that reminded me a lot of this music, this book, in that there's just this very like quietness that you get going into the woods or the forest to look for the berries. You have grandma and the granddaughter just celebrating the beautiful fruits of the land, literally, right? in this case, right? But I really liked it. And I want to say that Michaela is from Alaska, which is, again, not a group of First Peoples or Native Peoples that I get to read much about. So it was really, really a nice book. And Cheryl, you said you had read this one too.
Yeah, I loved that one. And one of the things I loved about it is the mention of thimbleberries. One of my favorite stories with my grandmother, who grew up in the UP in the Keweenaw Peninsula, which is rich with thimbleberries, was picking thimbleberries with her in the woods. So when I got to that point, I talked about that with my daughter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we have, my parents have jars of thimbleberry jam in their cupboard right now. They probably used it for breakfast this morning. We have a picture of thimbleberries in our kitchen.
Nice.
So we're big fans. So it was really cool to see it in a book.
Yeah.
Because you just don't, it's surprising how many people don't know about them. And it was just so fun to see it and think, oh, of course, Alaska, Upper Michigan, kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Similar climate, to some degree.
For sure. And what I really like, I think, as I was listening to that music, there's this theme in the book about, taking care of the land. We take care of the land, and the land takes care of us. Mm-hmm. It's a refrain that goes on through the book. It's really, really beautiful. And just this quiet way of enjoying the fruits of what's inside the forest when you go out looking.
Yeah.
Very cool. Okay, so I have a fiction novel, and this had been on, I'm actually really, this is a great, I don't want to say excuse, because this meant I could bump this book up higher on my list to do this podcast. I want to talk about Night of the Living Res by Morgan Talty. It's a collection of interlinked stories. It's and a debut. It's already, it's been long listed for the 2023 Andrew Carnegie Medal for excellence, and it won the New England Book Award for fiction. This is stories about contemporary life on and around the Penobscot Indian Island Reservation for the Penobscot tribe in Maine. And they run the gamut from it's biting humor, some sweet stories, and some really gut-wrenching heartbreak. He's examining generational trauma, contemporary afflictions, and asking the questions. I mean, you start to see as the stories go on, kind of, it's not clear what the link is from the beginning between the stories. You have two primary narrators is what it feels like. But it is, there's a running feeling, and it comes out in words towards the end of the book. And it's like, how did we get here and how do we get out of here? It is more on the downer side, but it's also, there's some celebration, but there's some, just an understanding of how hard we've made it. Mm-hmm. It deals with issues of drugs, it deals with issues of just healthcare, just family, the cycles that you get stuck in. So it's really beautiful writing. The list, if you're a person who's into picking a book by cover quotes, the people who have been blurbed for this book is off the chart. But top and front and center is Tommy Orange, and, mm-hmm. and I'm pretty much on board with anything Tommy Orange is saying you should read. But it also includes Brandon Hobson, Carol Hoffman, Tony Jensen. If you actually go to the page for it's a Tin House publication. If you actually go to the Tin House page, it just goes on and on and on forever. It's really well done. It's real. And I will add that it is a very good audiobook too. I actually listened to a good portion of it. So if you are an audiobook reader, this is a good one too. Just moving set of stories, and maybe more comfortable given it is a heavier topic, given that it is a set of short stories that you can sort of pick up and think about or put down and think about. Mm-hmm. So highly recommend it. It's The Night of the Living Res by Morgan Talty.
Sounds so good. Sounds nice. Well, that sort of leads into my next book, Tommy Orange Blurb, because this one has a Tommy Orange blurb on it too, as well as Alice Walker and an introduction by Arundhati Roy. This is a very unique and exquisitely beautiful book called No Country for 8 Spot Butterflies, a lyric essay by Julian Aguon. And lyric, it really is. Julian is indigenous, from Guam, born and raised in Guam, and he is of the Chamorro tribe. And this was, Madi had mentioned in a previous podcast about books that are set in places that you don't usually hear about. I can honestly say in my career as a librarian, I have never read a book, fiction or nonfiction, set in Guam.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
I'm sure that they're there and we just haven't gotten to them, but when I found that this is what this was about, I was just, there was no way I wasn't reading it. It's an extremely slim volume, and it's a compilation. So it's a mix of poetry, essays, two amazing commencement speeches. And it's he is a human rights and environmental lawyer in Guam, and he's been on some pretty important cases, especially regarding the environment and environmental justice. And Guam, you know, having a large, long history of involvement with the U.S. military being based there. They're considering another base right now that it features in the book. But there are parts of Guam that get displaced, and one of them is a piece of land that has the eight-spot butterfly, has the correct correct environment for it to thrive, and it's being threatened. Mm. Birds have already been threatened on Guam because of different military exercises that were there, where the fallout from the military exercises looked like snow and children played in it. So we have that history here. But we have this absolutely lyric, incredibly beautiful writing. And he's a big fan of Arundhati Roy. And she wrote a book called The God of Small Things. And he talks about the small things and about how can a government ever think about or love the small things? And if they did, what a difference it would make. If they loved the eight-spot butterfly. Right. If they loved a people who are a small number of them on a small piece of land. You know, all it goes all if we looked at things differently.
Right.
So it's extremely rich. It's one of the smallest books I've read this
yes.
year, but absolutely worth it. And I hope that he's on a tour this year, and I hope that you get a chance to check this one out. No Country for Eight-Spot Butterflies.
Okay, so my last book is Still This Love Goes On. And this is actually a book based on the lyrics by Buffy St. Marie, and it's illustrated by one of my favorite illustrators, Julie Flett. Well, I'll talk about the pictures in a moment, but let me just read some of the lyrics or the writing from this book. Sat beside a beaver dam and watched the winter grow. Ice was hard with little tracks appearing on the snow. Fog is in the valley now, and all the geese have gone. Cross the moon, I saw them go, and still this love goes on and on. Still this love goes on. This is just an amazing, amazing song. I did look up Buffy St. Marie singing. She is not just an activist, but a singer, a movie, someone involved in the movies. She's somewhat of a folk singer, perhaps. That was my take on listening to this song. Just beautiful in the way she's pointing to the land and the love that you have for the land around you. She wrote the song in Alberta, and I will mention that these two collaborators, Julie Flett and Buffy St. Marie, are Canadian or Cree Métis in the case of Julie Flett, who we have talked about before, but Buffy is Cree. And I really, the illustrations are just very, not simple in that, just quiet. And I think what I love the most about Julie Flett's work is that she gives you these pictures of Native communities coming together to celebrate, whether it would be just a mom and a daughter or jingle dancers. Just a gorgeous, gorgeous book. I think you get to think about, you know, what are the things that we love, and also thinking about outside being such a beautiful place that you know will love you always, and you get to love too, whether you're out in the woods or in the city. So I hope you check it out. It's really nice.
Okay. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Julie Flett. I mean,
yeah,
you just can't go wrong with the Julie Flett book.
Oh, no. Definitely not.
Okay. We're going to finish on a hard left. I have... This was a kind of out of the blue find for me, and it was really cool. My last book is Peacekeeper by B.L. Blanchard. This is a debut Michigan author, Michigan setting. We're coming back to the Anishinaabe peoples. And this is, at its heart, a mystery. But it starts with the thought, and it was kind of, I've seen the Blanchard interviewed. It started as a passing thought on a drive into work one day. Like, so what would the world look like if North America hadn't been colonized? How would the indigenous communities have developed without that? And so that's the premise of the world, and it's a well-developed world that this mystery is set against. It's and it means really thinking through what the Blanchard has a law background, and that's sort of one of the areas where she really puts a lot of thought into what's going on in terms of what legal systems would prevail, and as you're coming through, and so she developed, you know, what she thought would be a good system, and her main character, Chibonacci, is a peacekeeper. It's sort of the equivalent of a policeman type person, but it's not the same. I mean, it is a wholly developed different system. And he is the central character. His world came crashing down on him 20 years before. He had been at a Manuman festival in and around what is now Sault Ste. Marie on both sides, the Canadian and U.S. side, what is now the U.S. side. And he'd been out with friends. When he got home, his mother is dead. Before anything else can happen, his father confesses. And they have... There are only so many, I mean, they have developed the system. It is very, very rare. It's more a system of reparation than it is a system of penalizing. But there is very rare cases where somebody is put away and actually imprisoned. And his father, this is a case where his father is actually imprisoned. And he's left alone to care for a traumatized younger sister. He leans very heavily on his mother's best friend to help, and so they kind of go on. He that's probably part of the reason he becomes a peacekeeper. 20 years have passed. It's kind of a not healthy cycle. Him kind of home with his sister when he's not at work. His sister kind of locking herself in her room, but expecting to be around. It's just sort of very. It's an uncomfortable setting. 20 years have passed. Manuman Festival is happening again. His mother's best friend is murdered. Too similar, too strange. He really needs to know what's going on. And he will do anything to hunt down the answers to why this is happening around him and what's going on. So it's a domestic thriller. It's very twisty. And then it's got the really well-developed world. And it's the first of a series. So I'm really looking forward to the next one, which I think is due out in, I want to say March, but it's early spring. So I'm really looking forward to it. And that's The Peacekeeper by B.L. Blanchard.
Nice.
Yeah.
I think that's the last one we're doing today.
Yeah.
Thank you all for listening. Go search out more of these authors. They are wonderful, and it's so cool that there is such a bounty of Indigenous authors finally getting published and shared. And so,
absolutely.
Very cool. So, happy reading, everybody.
Happy reading.
Happy reading. Thank you.